Trend number two, the threat from deglobalization. Although globalization began in the 1970s and grew slowly throughout the 1980s, it was the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 that sparked its tremendous expansion. In the process, the number of people participating in the global free market more than doubled, growing from 2.7 billion to 6 billion. One side effect was the creation of 40 million new jobs in the United States alone. According to Gary Huffbauer of the Peterson Institute, globalized trade has made America $1 trillion richer every year. By the end of 2007, right before the recession began, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had soared from under 800 in 1982 to over 14,000. Globalization created a worldwide surge in economic activity over the past three decades as it brought together capital and labor, producers and consumers, and emerging and mature economies. Hundreds of millions of people around the world have moved out of poverty, with standards of living rising dramatically. At the same time, hundreds of billions of dollars in shareholder value has been created as globalization amplified economic growth and individual opportunity. Because of globalization, the past few decades have seen a growth in trade that has outpaced economic growth, and globalization has proven to be a wealth-creating machine. As explained in previous issues of Trends, globalization is absolutely crucial to unleashing the economic potential of the fifth techno-economic revolution. In fact, without the continuing advance of globalization, North America, South Korea, Japan, and the EU will be crushed by the demands of their aging populations. Meanwhile, India, China, Latin America, and Africa will never realize their full potential, and billions will languish in poverty. Unfortunately, the Great Recession appears to have triggered trends toward what we call deglobalization. There are many symptoms, including some that mirror the ill-fated actions taken after the stock market crash in 1929. History shows that the 1929 financial panic was transformed into the Great Depression of the 1930s by disastrous protectionist policies, exemplified by the notorious Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. Those decisions touched off a tariff war that paralyzed global trade and made recovery next to impossible. Learning from history, policymakers have so far avoided a repeat of those suicidal actions. But despite the relative scarcity of explicit anti-globalization policies, we've seen the slow deglobalization of economic activity. The IMF is projecting global real GDP growth to drop to 3.2% in 2012, which is down from 5.8% last year and 12.6% in 2010. It is being forecast to grow just 3.6% in 2013. Meanwhile, the WTO has reduced its forecast for world trade expansion from 3.7% to 2.5% and dropped its 2013 estimate from 5.6% to 4.5%. There are at least three major factors contributing to deglobalization and exacerbating a global economic slowdown. First, the EU is driving a large degree of this deglobalization. Emerging markets have traditionally obtained roughly 80% of their trade financing from European banks. But now, because these banks are severely undercapitalized, they are being forced to bring that capital home. This, combined with capital scarcity, is inhibiting global trade financing and accelerating deglobalization. Second, global banking has become less attractive due to conflicting capital requirements and massive regulatory complexity across jurisdictions. As a result, global financial systems are becoming more nationalistic. Governments are encouraging financial institutions to concentrate their efforts on lending to local small businesses and consumers. And third, mistrust has risen between nations, with at least 12 countries beyond China manipulating their currencies against the dollar in an attempt to gain a trade advantage. This has brought the world to the brink of a currency war. The impact of this move toward deglobalization could be far-reaching. In the U.S., it could make it much more difficult for the economy to reach the level of robust growth needed for full employment. But it could create a greater crisis than a financial one. It could lead to an outbreak of global protectionism, which could have ramifications that are far greater than simply economic. Given this trend, we offer the following forecasts. First, implementing more free trade agreements will be crucial to revitalizing globalization. These agreements will address the threat of deglobalization at its core. They will knock down barriers to growth, increase global trade, and coordinate policy actions that would grow economic potential. They will also help mute the voices calling for increased nationalism. The first principles for economic growth in a global economy are free markets, free people, and free trade. If these principles are abandoned, the gains from globalization will be lost, and the United States cannot afford this if our economy is going to return to healthy growth. Recent trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama, along with a possible agreement with the Asia-Pacific, should be a model for a new, robust free trade agreement with Europe. This would have the effect of strengthening the world's two largest economies, as well as declaring their mutual commitment to economic growth. Second, creation of a consumer economy in China, which includes elimination of artificial barriers to imports, will prove crucial in reversing the trend toward deglobalization. Globalization elevated hundreds of millions of people out of poverty in markets, most notably China, that were once closed. But now, in the face of a slumping economy and weak domestic demand, China has erected barriers to importing American goods. Recently, tariffs ranging from 2% to 21.5% were levied on cars made in the U.S. This was apparently in reaction to new duties the U.S. unwisely levied on low-end tires imported from China. And China has gone further, imposing other barriers to trade as well, including restrictions on the export of rare earth minerals that are key components in the manufacturing of high-tech goods such as hybrid cars, iPads, and missiles. These types of restrictions and tariffs may seemingly solve short-term trade issues, but they can have far-reaching negative consequences on long-term trade results. The perceived need for these restrictions is being driven in part by erosion of China's export-led economic model. One of the reasons this model is crumbling is because the nation is losing its competitive edge, largely due to a double-digit rise in worker wages. But ironically, it's this rise in wages and the resulting creation of a consumer economy that could ultimately do more to boost China's wealth than providing cheap exports ever did. The consumer economy of middle-class wage earners will create an internal demand for goods that have traditionally been exported, and it will also create demand for imported goods. The flow of these goods in and out of China would be best facilitated by removal of all artificial barriers. Third, the dramatic renaissance in U.S. energy production and manufacturing will also play a big role in reversing deglobalization. Since the 70s, the United States has run consistent trade deficits, owing largely to a decline in non-agricultural exports and a rise in energy imports. However, the discovery of cheap, abundant domestic energy in the United States promises to make it an energy exporter before 2020. Coupled with a rise in highly automated technology-based manufacturing and our logistical proximity to consumer markets, these low-cost energy inputs are giving American exports a competitive advantage. A reemergence of U.S. manufacturing that would be able to produce goods that are competitively priced would create export opportunities in many industries. And fourth, Capital will remain expensive for developing economies because of their lack of genuine transparency. But this will prevent the kind of misguided lending that brought on the European debt crisis. The lack of genuine transparency in emerging markets is causing bank regulators and lenders to be concerned about their potential exposure to losses in their overseas bank branches. Therefore, some are simply opting to pull out of developing countries altogether. The Institute for International Finance predicts net capital flows of $746 billion to emerging markets this year, a drop of almost one-fifth from the prior year. Because of this drop, credit will become even more expensive than it is today.